From WGCU News, I'm Amy Tardiff. A recent investigation by the South Florida Sun Sentinel discovered two sugar farms on state-owned land that are contributing to water pollution in the Florida Everglades. The article says these farms are supposed to reduce the amount of phosphorus in its waters every year, but over a five-year period, the newspaper finds one farm averaged a 210% increase and the other had a 140% increase. WGCU's Jessica Mazaros speaks with the journalist who reported on this issue.
Andy Reid, a reporter with the Sun Sentinel, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
So you reported on the connection between polluted water from two sugarcane farms in Florida and pollution in the Everglades. First, tell us a bit about these two farms.
Well, these properties were some of the properties in the region that continually fail to reduce pollution levels to the state target. Basically, there's a vast farming region that stretches from south of Lake Okeechobee down to what remains of the Everglades. And there are special rules in that farming region to reduce pollution in the water that flows to the Everglades. That requires farmers in that region to use different farming practices aimed at reducing water pollution, cleaning out their drainage canals, leveling the land so that water doesn't collect in certain areas, reducing pollution use when they can, and changing the way they apply fertilizer to the land, trying to have less runoff. And on a whole, the region every year usually meets its pollution reduction requirements. The state requirement is that the region as a whole reduces the amount of phosphorus in that runoff water by 25% below this state standard. And as long as the region as a whole meets that standard, then everything's fine. Now, if the region doesn't meet that standard, then they would start looking property by property to see which properties in that region are having the elevated pollution levels. These two state-owned lands happen to be among the dozen or more properties every year that don't meet that 25% goal, but because the region as a whole does, they're not required to do more than they're currently doing.
So is the state okay with these levels coming from these individual properties?
The state officials, specifically the South Florida Water Management District, which owns one of the properties directly and oversees water quality in this region, they'll tell you that this is just a blip on the greater scope of things, that it has no measurable impact, that just because two properties out of hundreds and hundreds are falling short of the standards, it doesn't dilute the regional success that they're having. And the sugar industry will tell you the same thing. They say that you can't look at it on a property-by-property basis, that it's a regional problem and that it's best tackled on a regional basis, that different properties, some of them naturally have higher phosphorus levels, which make it harder for those properties to meet the state standard, and that it's better to look at it on a regional level. And they point to Everglades water quality getting better over the last decade or two and getting close to the overall goal of Everglades restoration as proof that the regional approach is working. Now, critics of that say the benchmarks are already set too low, that the 25% reduction was something that sugarcane growers can meet too easily because it's basically doing 25% better than doing nothing. It's based on a time period when there wasn't an effort to reduce phosphorus, so that if you're only doing 25% better than that, then you're not really accomplishing much. And they say that the regional approach, instead of a property-by-property focus, allows these so-called pollution hotspots to continue through the years, and that if they were held to account property by property, that the benefits of Everglades restoration could kick in sooner.
You mentioned the billions of dollars that the state of Florida spends to clean up the Everglades. Why is this significant to you and your story regarding these two farms and the phosphorus-laden water?
Well, it just sort of puts it in perspective that even if you're not concerned about the environmental well-being of the Everglades and of that water supply that helps supplement South Florida drinking water, there's a financial aspect to this. You know, the state and federal government is spending billions of dollars over the next 30 years trying to get more water flowing to the Everglades and trying to clean up Everglades water pollution. So things along the way that hamper that or add to the pollution potentially make it more costly to taxpayers.
So what's your main takeaway from reporting on this story?
This story just highlights some of the challenges that are still out there for Everglades restoration, and it focuses on these two publicly owned properties as examples of the difficulties that come from trying to rein in phosphorus and the challenges that go along with that. You know, there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle of restoring the Everglades. This is just a sort of a peek inside how farming can affect things and what's done or what's supposed to be done to reduce those effects of water pollution.
Andy Reid, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That was reporter for the Sun Sentinel newspaper, Andy Reid. He connected the phosphorus-laden water from a couple sugar farms on state-owned land to pollution in the Florida Everglades. Find out more about his investigation on WGCU.org. Jessica Mazaros, WGCU News.